The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. We have a couple of nice ladies in here from the Bad Axe District Library. We're going to be talking about things that are offered at the library, in particular for children. We have Mimi Harrington and Jean Summers. And I want to thank you both for coming in today and talking to us.
Thanks for having us.
The library in downtown Bad Axe, been around quite a while, as I understand it, and it's a district library.
That's true. In fact, we just celebrated our 100th anniversary in 2013.
Well, then you've been around a while.
Well, not me personally, but the library has.
Predated books almost here. And it's grown, and it's not your grandma's library anymore. It's changed for the modern times, and you have to keep up.
Absolutely. As our program brochure indicates, we have books and a whole lot more. As we've become more technological in our way of life, the library has strived to stay relevant. We've gone from just books to audio books, books on CD and tape. We even have nifty little devices called Playaway, which you can just stick in your pocket and has a whole book on with a small item that looks like a deck of cards. We have downloadable ebooks and audio books, and we are adding more and more ebooks basically as quickly as we can, including downloadable ebooks for young adults, for teens and juvenile readers, because obviously as tablets become more commonplace that kids use, we're trying to keep our reading accessible in a way that kids are going to want to access it.
There's also something really nice right on the web page called Tumble Books. Kids can access it for free. They do not need to log in or anything else. Just click the little blue button on the website, and they can watch kind of an animated book, and the words are there, and the words that are being read are highlighted. It's an excellent way for kids to read or be read to with some assistance there.
We're kind of old school, to me there's a feel to a book that you don't get with a pad, but you've had to go with the times, because the younger kids and the new generation, this is what they're learning with, I guess.
That's right. In fact, it's interesting that the item most checked out at the library still is a true book, but as we look forward to the future, and as our young people, become more of the mainstream of library users, we have to stay relevant. And I think we're going to see an ever increasing use of ebooks, downloadable ebooks, audiobooks, and that sort of thing.
Do you see it eventually, maybe almost changing over? I mean, because the printed book, that costs money. And a lot of things that are done on e-format, you just have to write it and basically send it. You don't have to do the paper. You don't have to bind it. You don't have to ship it. It seems like it's almost a natural for the modern way of thinking. But again, there's just something about having a physical book you call your own.
That's true. It's going to be a very interesting question to see what libraries look like, say, 50 years from now. I just don't know whether there will be that many hard-bound or soft-bound books. But at this point, yes, books do cost a certain amount to produce, but e-books are still a significant cost also. And it's just an interesting quick aside. There is currently major controversy in the library world because publishers are afraid that if they sell an e-book to a library, that book can be checked out many, many times, and a lot of publishers fear that they're going to lose revenue by selling the book to the library. So what's happened is that currently, say a bestseller like, say, James Patterson or Danielle Steele, those ebooks will actually cost even more than a printed book costs right now. Now, obviously, over time, hopefully that situation is going to change and the cost of ebooks will come down. But it's really interesting to see there's a huge range in cost of ebooks, the cost to the library. Now, when a person is a patron at the library, though, they get those books for free. I mean, the library absorbs that cost, and the patron can check the ebook out for free.
It just seems like a almost, I guess, ridiculous position. Libraries have always been a place to where you didn't have to buy a book, you can just borrow it. That was the whole point of it, all the way back to Ben Franklin. You know, this is what a library is you borrow it, and the publisher and the guy who wrote the book aren't getting anything more of it than the sale of the book to you.
Oh, that's true. But with ebooks and their you know, rapid rise in popularity, we are really seeing real fear on the part of at least the big six major publishers, and their fear that they will really lose revenue by having people check out ebooks through libraries. For example, one of the publishers only allows, say, 26 checkouts, and once an ebook has been checked out 26 times, that book goes away, and the library has to repurchase it for the next 26 checkouts. So those kinds of things are going on, you know, between publishers and libraries, and they're working through the issues, and we hope they will work out for the benefit of libraries and the public.
You know, people can go to Amazon or whatever, but those books you purchase, you have the experience where you can go to the library, check it out, and you haven't spent all that money and maybe find, you know, a chapter or two in this isn't really what I thought it was going to be, and you can bring it back.
Exactly. That
was one of the benefits of the library, is that you could try different things without having to purchase it. And then if you liked it, you go out and have yourself your own copy.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of libraries, that we did a cost study once, and the savings to the public, given all the different items that the Bad Axe Library has, is in the millions of dollars. That if people had to pay for everything that they can check out or use, for example, the computers, or take a computer class, download an ebook, it's over, I think it's about $1.5 million in value.
Now, I remember as a kid, you go to the library when you want to do research in school. Has that changed? I mean, I don't think they print encyclopedias anymore. I think they're all on a CD or a DVD-ROM or something, because I remember you had to get the latest Britannica or whatever and try and find the latest information, because every year they had to print a new set for what we learned the last year.
That's absolutely true. Our reference section, for example, which is where kids or adults would go to do research, it has probably shrunk into about a third of the size it was when I started almost 11 years ago at the library. And the Encyclopedia Britannica, for example, you're more apt to find that online. For example, the library can subscribe to an encyclopedia online rather than having, you know, 3 feet of shelf space taken up by the books. It's very true. So much of research is electronic. But we do see a number of students that will come in doing research, and in fact, we direct them to a wonderful state resource, which is, if anybody ever needs to get an article on a certain topic, MEL.org. It's just MEL.org. It has just a ton of great information, journal articles, that sort of thing, and lots of different databases for students versus adults. It's a very, very handy resource, and it's available to all Michigan residents.
And what libraries seem to do is more on the local level. They have a lot of the local history that, you know, you couldn't go to the New York Public Library to find, you know, books about Bad Axe and its histories, or Huron County. But the Bad Axe Library, the other libraries in the area, they would have these kind of books available to do such research.
Yes, and one of the more recent projects we've been working on that I'm extremely excited about is that we are starting to digitize some of those local history resources. If you go on our website, at this point you will find a number of cemeteries in Huron County that Bob LaBelle and some other individuals in the 1990s visited all the cemeteries in Huron County and noted all the headstones and birth and death dates. And for genealogists doing research, it's very helpful. Well, we are digitizing all those books and then putting them up on our website, so that you could be out in California and want to do some research on your family, well, you could do it from your home computer and not have to travel to Bad Axe. And we hope to get all our cemetery records and all the obituaries that we have collected over the years, as well as some of the more important local history books, or maybe even family summaries, that sort of thing. They will eventually all be up on our website and accessible as long as you have a computer and the internet. And that's going to be a very helpful resource for people who are doing family history. There was one library in the area that is doing the same thing, and just out of the blue, they got a letter from a man in Utah, and he sent them a $20 donation because he was so pleased that he was able to access their local history resources, and he got the information on his family that he needed. And so he felt the least he could do is send in a donation.
A lot cheaper than a flight here.
Absolutely.
And these types of books and records aren't likely to be reprinted, so by digitizing them, you're preserving them.
Absolutely.
They're not being worn out, and people aren't, they say there's acid on your hands, and that wears on the pages and everything else, so it'll allow these in their pristine form to remain piece of history a lot longer.
That's a big part of the reason that we're doing this project, because the more these items get used, the more they get worn, they have the danger of walking off, unfortunately, and this way we can preserve all the local history materials and have them available to everybody.
Is that the appropriate library term, walking off?
our technical term.
It's overdue by 14 years.
Right, it got legs.
This is Parenting Awareness Month, and we're going to be talking about kids in particular in the library, because a lot of programs are there for kids, and they come from a lot of different sources utilizing the library to take advantage of what you have there.
We've had lots and lots of community support for different programs that we've had, and we've been very pleased by all of that, starting with WLEW when we have some programs that we want, and also the Tribune and the Huron County View. We just get so much good help to put that word out to the people, and our programs have benefited a lot from the help of those media sources. The school has helped us a lot in also publicity, but they allow us to get kids to come over to the library after school on the school bus. They take the permission notes from the parents and send the kids to us. So that works out really good for us for our after school story hour. We had a lot of local people helping with our centennial. Our kickoff for reading last summer, we tied into our centennial, and we had lots of volunteers come. We had about 120 kids, so we needed a lot of volunteers to kind of shuffle those kids around and keep them busy with different things in the library, and we had the people there to do it.
The term is herding cats.
<That's right. laughs> Kind of like that. It was pretty crowded in there, but lots of people doing it with us, so we appreciated that. Another thing that we did with a lot of community help this year was just say thanks. We kind of got the idea we wanted to thank our local responders at Christmas time. So we started it with the story hours, but it went out to the rest of the patrons as well. People brought in wrapped snacks and drinks and things. Then we packed up little packages and sent them delivered them to the Bad Axe Police Department, the Sheriff's Department, Fire Department, the ambulance. And that was not library, it was library staff participated, but it was the community thanking, and that was a real big support we got. Do you want to hear more things we did?
What else have you
got
going? Okay,
we had Big Truck Day, and lots of local truck owners shared their trucks with our kids. The kids came and jumped up and down on the flatbed trucks and sat inside the fire trucks and just had such a wonderful time. It was a rainy, rainy day, but
they didn't mind.
when we finished, the kids and the truck drivers all had smiles on their faces. I think everybody had a good time. And it was just local trucks. We had a dig into the city where we took our kids around, and they went to the post office. the theater, the police department, country cottage florist, and to Signature Bank, and they got to see behind the scenes. But they went around in groups, and they got to go where they don't usually get to go. And our community was really great about that.
Is this a way to introduce the kids to a library, this new generation? In my day, the library, well, you had one in school and you had one in there, but the school libraries seem to be diminishing. The costs are a lot of money to have the latest books in there, not to mention you have staffing and everything else, and the schools just, you know, numbers are declining and so are their funding. I think they're turning more and more to the public libraries to help in these regards. So I would imagine it's important to get kids familiar with the library. It's not just that building next to the park where we have summer day camp.
Right.
There's stuff going on in there.
Absolutely. And it's that. It's getting them familiar with the building. It's getting them familiar with the people. And also, it's imparting some knowledge. We have information about all of these topics in the library. So if we can perk a little bit of interest on the kids' part, they can learn and they can become lifetime learners just by being interested in what's going on.
And what I really like about some of these programs that Jean planned, and she's just done a wonderful job spearheading efforts with the children's programs and planning. We had another example of community involvement during our centennial party last September. Jean contacted, there must have been 15, 20 different individuals in the community who all have these hidden or not so hidden talents of from quilting to woodworking to metalworking, and they were all on display at the community at the library during the centennial party. What is so nice about these kinds of programs is that it creates a connection between the library and the rest of the community. And in terms of what kids see, Big Truck Day, well, they got to actually go in a huge, 18-wheeler and blow the horn and see what it's like. Well, if that program hadn't been planned by the library, maybe they would never have gone inside a big truck. Or the dig into the city, getting to be in places. I mean, we went way up into the second floor of the movie theater, and a place I'd never been. It was very interesting, and so I really like these kinds of programs that Jean has been planning, because they create a connection between kids at the library and then the rest of the community, and it just brings everybody together.
And when they find things interesting, there's things at the library they can reference to learn further about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, hopefully that'll spur their interest further to come in and learn more and find out more.
Isn't a big part of this, though, not just even the actual knowledge that you can get from the books, but developing the imagination?
Oh, absolutely.
When you go see a movie made from a book, you're seeing somebody's idea of how that book went.
Good point.
You read it yourself, you create the characters in your head. You may have to revise them as you get down the line because you learn more about them, and they're not really like that. They better be more like, but they become more of your characters and your story than somebody else's version. And that would lead on to other things in creativity, just being able to imagine.
It's called connections. If you learn about a truck driver and you talk to him and you blow his horn and he shows you all these things, when you have to learn in school or read about a truck driver, then you know one. You can make that connection. That's part of the curriculum in school, is making connections between what you are learning and what you already know. So we're trying to just give them a good round basis of their community so that they know about people here and things that are happening.
That's why, at least personally, I feel extremely strongly about Story Hour, and that's why I'm so glad that when Jean retired from the Bad Axe Public Schools, she was interested in coming to the public library to help get Story Hour going again. We'd, to be honest, had a little bit of a lapse. But with children knowing who Mrs. Summers was, that really, I think that helped invigorate interest. And it's because of what happens at Story Hour that I feel so strongly about it, because that is where children are listening to a story. They're being asked to, as you indicated, imagine or make pictures in their mind and put themselves in that situation. And that's, in terms of, you said that March is a parenting month. It's also reading month. And I see the two going together. I mean, there's nothing more important than parents taking even 15 minutes a day to read with their children, because if they give them that foundation, even at a few months old, the child doesn't really have to be aware of what's on the page. It's that act of reading and starting that foundation of imagining and building creativity in a child's mind, don't you think, Jean?
Yes. Some stories I've read so many times I could just tell them, but I don't. I want the children to see me reading the book. That's huge. The book. The physical book is there, and I'm reading it, and you're listening, and we're both thinking, all thinking about it. Yes.
And studies have proven the earlier parents start reading to their kids, it's just a direct connection to how successful that child will be once they enter school and as they grow. Young early readers are always the strongest students.
It takes it from being a chore to something you enjoy.
Absolutely.
Kids who enjoy reading will even read a book they're supposed to read in school, even if it wasn't one they would have picked, and maybe find something in it they like, or learn that, you know, hey, don't judge it by its cover,
right?
That type of stuff. And then, so
that's why I wanted to continue being with kids with books in the library. The best part of my job at school all the years was sharing the love of books, and not so much books, but reading. And I can continue to do that. I do continue to do that. I think one kid said to me once, every time you start to read a book, you tell me it's our favorite. It's your favorite book. Well, yeah, they're all my favorite. When I'm reading them, this is my favorite book. And if the kids get that impression from me, I hope it spreads a little bit.
They're listening.
Oh, yes.
Not that much.
They're there, so they're listening, yes.
Do parents need to be part of this to help guide their child into books that are appropriate for them, books that they can read? I think one of the things that would discourage a child is to get a book that's beyond their reading ability, and, you know, then they get frustrated and they don't want to read anymore. You want to challenge them to a point, but you want to make sure that you're not overdoing it, so that it's a good experience and they want to keep going. And I think parents and the library help on that matter.
The library is good in that the children's room is divided. There are some easy readers, and the parents go there. I've been seeing them this month of March is reading month, where they have some requirements at school, walking out with big stacks of those easy readers. Well, the parents can go there and know that if my child is a beginner, I can select here and there's a very good chance they can read it. Then we have the divided interest levels of different books in the children's room. And then there's the area where what we call chapter books. A lot of the books are even marked if they are accelerated reader to go along with the school's program. The school uses this leveled reading program, and they can get those books at the library and find out what exact reading level the book is. Very often the kids know exactly what level they should be reading. So the library tries in every way to make that easier for parents and kids.
We make it a family experience, and it becomes the family thing to do.
There are also toys in the kids' room. And a lot of times parents come in and they pick out books with the kids, and then the kids kind of sit and play a little bit, and it's a nice place to be.
And that's the experience you want them to have.
Absolutely.
You want them to want to come back and not think, you know, it's like standing in line at, you know, the makeup counter, and they're like, why are we looking at this? I don't want to do this. But you make it an experience that the kids want to return to.
Yes.
And in fact, the toddler time that we have, which is for kids under the age of five and under.
Yes.
The parents are highly encouraged to stay with their children. And I think what happens is that Jean is reading, but she's also able to model how the interaction should go between, say, the adult reader and the child. And so we like it when the parents stay and get involved in the story hour, because then, as you say, there's that family time, and there's the bonding that can go on. And I think that the kids probably enjoy it even that much more, because they've got Mrs. Summers up front reading, but mom or dad is sitting next to them, you know, being engaged in the story. And I think it just makes it that much more of a positive experience.
I think parents often miss the point that sometimes you get a real bang out of just reliving your childhood again through your child's eyes, reading a book that's really too simple for you, But watching them enjoy it and seeing, remembering how it was for you then, it just brings it full circle.
Yep. And, you know, everybody's lives are busy, and especially, you know, young families where, say, both parents are working. Everybody's tired. There's too much to do. But really, your thought can be, I don't have time to take 15, 20 minutes out to sit down and read. But really, I think what people will find is if they do sit down and spend the 15 or 20 minutes with their child, grandchild, niece, nephew, it to me, it's one of the most calming, enjoyable experiences, because there's just something about looking at a book with a little kid. It is just very fulfilling and very enjoyable.
And the time will fly.
I mean, absolutely.
It's like when people come on my show here, they think, what are we going to do with this whole time? And, and then the time flies.
Yeah.
Is there a busier time for the library? Is the winter months busier when people are more indoors rather than running around and looking for a good book to grab a blanket and sit by the fire?
I think that the winter is a little bit quieter, especially this past winter, although we did see an uptick in just general activity in February. January was quite quiet, and I think, you know, after the holidays it calms down, but the weather, I think, really inhibited people from getting out because, you know, it was just so dreadfully awful.
I would think to be in there looking at travel books.
Well, that's true. That's true, if they can get from their house to the car to the library. Summer is quite busy because of the summer reading program. Uh-huh. We always see a big uptick in activity during the summer.
You get a little bleed over from the day camp too, or do they just kind of go home after that? They're all tired.
Yeah, sometimes we do. Sometimes kids will come into the library to wait for their parents. And in the past few years, we've tried to coordinate with the Parks and Rec program, which has been a great way to sort of supplement what they're doing in Parks and Rec, because then we'll have certain special programs. We make sure that Parks and Rec kids are available to come attend the programs, you know, from singers to storytellers, magicians, programs like that. And we've been trying to coordinate with Parks and Rec in the past, and that we just figured that's a good way to expose all the kids who are in Parks and Rec to, you know, a few additional programs.
Their counselors
also. It seemed
like
it would be a perfect time afterwards,
yeah.
Because you've kind of burned off that extra energy. They're able to sit and concentrate and relax a little more, and then your programs can kick in and show them what the library can bring them.
Well, yeah. Their counselors have also been kind of after lunch bringing them in for a little bit of time to sit and be calm and read. Either the counselor would read to the young kids or give the older ones a chance to just have some time in the library to read to themselves, kind of in conjunction with our reading program, so they can fill in their books on that too. So the counselors are really instrumental in that, helping the kids to get that habit of reading after lunch.
So you're starting to get closer to summer. We're hoping it's coming.
Right.
Haven't felt spring yet, so we don't know about summer yet. But do you have more programs coming up in the summer? What have you got coming up?
Well, we do have some planned events coming soon. Can I tell you about those?
Well, they still may be cold outside, but they're sure upcoming events.
Okay. During spring break, we know that all the kids don't get to go somewhere, and by Thursday they need something to do, so we're having a movie. That would be Thursday, April 3rd, during spring break at 2 o'clock, we're showing Pinocchio. And that will go until 3:45. Then after the movie, we're going to have a story hour, 3:45 until 4:30. So the kids can come and basically spend a good bit of the afternoon at the library.
What ages are you looking for? Because parents are going to want to know if they're too young or if they're too old to go.
Well, it's Disney's Pinocchio, so preschoolers like that. Preschoolers would probably not be able to sit by themselves for that long, so parents can come and sit with them. Sometimes they do, and that's nice.
So parents are welcome.
Parents Absolutely. Are welcome and encouraged. Also, the older kids can come and just kind of be there. Anybody that's interested in Pinocchio.
Who doesn't like Pinocchio?
Right.
Well, you know, you don't want to scare kids when it becomes a donkey in the middle. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. And then for the story after, I've picked some funny ones, so even older kids can enjoy listening to a story. And then we also have Spring Craft coming up. That's April 12th. That's a Saturday. From 1 to 2, kids can come and make some springtime crafts, hopefully dust off the snowflakes a little bit. And
you mean we're not going to make snowmen?
No. No, not even one. One thing I do want to say, though, is we don't charge for things at the library. Kids can come and make things, and we don't charge them. The movies are free. The popcorn's free. And we don't ask for library cards or a sign-in. Anybody is invited to come for our events. But then in the summer, we are going to have a summer reading program. I think I'm getting a late start because it doesn't really look like summer's coming. But we'll have some summer activities and a summer reading program. Now, we also are going to have Kid University. That's something we started last year, and it went really well. All of our classes were loaded more than we thought we were going to, and we ended up with a waiting list, and we're going to do it again this year. Kid University is a time in August that we present classes, and people from the community come in and teach. And whatever they want to teach, that kids want to learn. Kids are interested in everything. I've already contacted an artist and two engineers, and I'll be working on more interesting things for the kids. So if the parents can kind of pay attention and watch, that will be happening. The way they can get information about all these things is on our website. It's always posted. Everything that we do at www.badaxlibrary.org. We post all of our upcoming events, so if you can check on there. Like us on Facebook, and then you would get the posting. Parents can call the library and just ask to be added to a contact list, and then we send out emails to kind of let parents know what's coming. So if they ask to be on that list, then they'll know what we're doing.
And these summer-type programs, they're good for the kids in many different ways. I know I always hear from teachers that, you know, they come back in the fall and we spend the first couple of weeks or a month or two relearning just to get back into the study mode. And if you're reading over the summer, if you're learning over the summer, you're keeping those skills up.
Absolutely.
That's a big reason why we like the summer reading program and would always keep it going, because it is so important to keep reading over the summer, because otherwise, as you say, they will have lost several months of learning, and the teachers have to redo a lot of what they've did in the late spring before school ends.
And it's fun for the kids, and it makes the learning experience enjoyable, which is part of the whole point, so you go back to school
Absolutely.
With a positive attitude that
Absolutely.
You can learn.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And we also try to do some things that help them to be able to sit down. And sometimes kids come back to school and they're wiggling and they can't sit. If they are in the library, kind of gradually getting back into that mode, it might help a little bit. I don't know if it will or not, but we hope so. But absolutely, the reading. Our reading programs always go weekly, so that are our small goals. Read this many books and then get a little prize, and read this many books and get a little prize, so that you have small goals that seem like you can do it, not just all this for the summer. It's not a great big long reading list or something like that.
And if a family goes on vacation, we have overlap at the end, such that if a child has read 3 weeks and then they go on vacation, they don't have to despair. They can catch up when they get back, because we're not tied to any real set schedule. What we want is for them to be able to complete the program, get the hours of reading in, and get prizes, so that it's okay if there's a gap where they're, visiting family or they're off on vacation. We are totally flexible about helping kids complete the reading program.
And there's nothing that says they just can't check out a book or two and have something to read while they're on vacation on a rainy day or when nothing's going on.
That's right.
That's right. Last year we took the kids that completed on a special picnic trip down to the petroglyph. So there's a little incentive to complete the whole program.
A little bit wanted to talk about before you're done is you do all these programs, there's no cost to them, but there's cost to you. You got to buy the books. You got to buy the e-books. You got to pay your heat. And over this winter, I imagine you've paid a lot. And you're not sitting there going, well, this is an old book. We'll burn that one. You know, that's not the way you people work in the library. You protect these things. So funding sources, I imagine, are like everything the last couple of years, getting a little leaner.
Well, since we've become a district library, we've had a much more stable source of funding than we did prior to 2007. But with property value, as property values fluctuate, then the amount of tax revenue that we take in does fluctuate. Luckily, our budget has been stable, to date. One area of concern that is looming has to do with what's called the personal property tax.
They're trying to eliminate that. In fact, they've got bills going through right now about that.
Right.
And they're talking about making municipalities whole, but I don't think it includes libraries.
Well, luckily, a district library, for example, such as we are, is actually a taxing entity.
Oh, there you go.
Because that's basically why the Bad Axe Library became a district library, because we had funding issues. We needed to be like Harbor Beach and Pigeon and Cass City and a lot of libraries in Michigan, which have taxing districts. And luckily, libraries are included in this whole scheme to eliminate the personal property tax, but hopefully replace it with apparently revenue that will be available because of the expiration of some tax credits, I guess. But we are very concerned because the personal property tax represents 10% of our budget, at about $25,000. So if the personal property tax would just go away, we would really be in a bind, as would all the other district libraries in the area. So we're hoping that the set of measures being introduced and debated will get passed, and then there also has to be a vote, I believe, in August by the people of Michigan.
That's funding is probably the part of it that you pull your hair out from, because
exactly.
There's not a lot of places you can go, and you've got the communities in the district contributing, but beyond that, costs go up, heat goes up, especially in a winter like this. You've been probably cranking that thing a lot more than it used to in past years. And in the summertime, if we're going to have a warm one, you're going to have air conditioning costs, and all of that cuts into budgets.
Right. No, that's so true. That's very true. And we just hope that the whole personal property tax issue will be resolved to the benefit of all the local municipalities, not just the libraries, but the county, the cities. There are a lot of local entities that could be impacted.
Well, we've been talking mainly kids today, but you offer services for all generations. I know we've got a lot of seniors out there who listen. You have audiobooks if the peepers aren't working as good as they used to. You have some books in bigger print, and you can help them find the things that will work for them, that will interest them. And I know you do book sharing and stuff with other libraries, so if you don't have it on hand, you might be able to get it for
them.
That's
right.
So there's a lot of benefits to just going in and finding out what the library can do for you.
Absolutely. And for those who, especially with the weather the way it was this winter, can't get out or don't want to venture out into the bad weather, we also have a homebound book delivery program. Anybody who can't make it into town to pick up a book, we will be more than happy to deliver that book to the individual at their home. And we do that for a few people already, and we're glad to do it for anybody who just, doesn't drive anymore or just can't get in to the library.
A lot of the things I talked about, eyesight and stuff, would prevent you from driving and getting in.
Right.
And when you do come into town, if you're taking the transit bus or something, you're usually trying to get in and out as fast as you can, and not, you go into the library, you don't know how long you're going to spend there.
Right.
So. But you can help them out, and I imagine calling would probably be the first step, because if you have vision problems, the website might not be your best choice.
That's right. Anybody can call anytime and just talk to us about getting books delivered, and we'll be glad to work with them.
Well, terrific. Sounds like you've got a lot of nice programs out there and dreaming up more as the years go by. I'm sure when you started at the library, you never envisioned this is where it would be in 2014.
The changes that have occurred in just 10 years have been really quite amazing.
Has the library always been where it's been, or is this, was that built a few years And after an original library that may have been in a house or something.
Correct. The library has been where it is now since 1972.
Okay.
And prior to that, it was first on the first floor and then on the second floor of Old City Hall, which is no longer, but it's just up the street to the north. And prior to that, from 1913 till about 1926, it was actually in a woman's house on the northeast corner of Northport Crescent and Woodworth streets. Miss Mary Morgan offered to put aside a room in her house for the books that the Bad Axe Women's Club actually started the library. And she was a member of the women's club, and so she offered up her living room. And then I think health reasons or other circumstances occurred such that that was becoming impossible. So the women's club asked the city of Bad Axe, when it was building new City Hall, whether they could have a spot in City Hall. And so they contributed about $2,500 to the building of City Hall, and had a space just to the right when you would walk in Old City Hall, but then, as I think most people of our generation remember, the long climb up the stairs to second floor with all the anticipation of arriving at the library on the second floor of Old City Hall.
So to say, from a tiny mustard seed with Mary there all the way to what we have today.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad that we've got people there who are good stewards and going to keep the library going and keep the next generation interested in what you have to offer. And hope it's around for another 100 years.
We do too, and we just want to let the whole community know everyone is welcome. We'd love to see you at the library.
Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Our guests today on the program have been Mimi Harrington and Jean Summers from the Bad Axe District Library. They're out there on next to the park downtown, and just stop in during business hours when the library's open and check out all they have to offer for kids on up through senior generations. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.